Hello, my name is Monty Rowland, and I'm with Monty Gear in Morrisville, North Carolina. And this morning I want to spend a few minutes talking about our EMP-resistant enclosure, which also you could call a Faraday cage. The threat of an EMP from a bad actor or a foreign state is actually a real threat. The presence of nuclear devices around the world means that if someone was to take a nuclear device, especially one tuned for an EMP blast, if someone was to take a nuclear device, take a cargo ship, launch a missile, say 50 miles up, detonate that device, the EMP blast would take out a tremendous amount of electronics on which our society depends. And then the following chaos, lack of food, lack of medicine, lack of power, would just decimate our country. It could take decades or tens of decades to recover. Another real threat, and it's one of those that's hard to get your hands around, because you look up in the sky and the sun keeps you warm and it feels good, but is a coronal mass ejection. Coronal mass ejection is basically a solar flare. Those get very, very large, and there's a chance, well, let me rephrase it, statistically, at some point we're going to get hit again. The last time was in the 1800s, and if that were to happen, that solar flare hitting the atmosphere wouldn't hurt anybody. But what it would do is the interaction of our atmosphere and the Van Allen belts that protect us from cosmic radiation would generate EMPs for days, if not weeks. And that would have a similar effect as a nuclear device going off. However, that would affect the entire world, not just one area. And so in that case, it would throw us back to the, as far as, well, no electronics. So one of the things that you can do is to put your electronics in a enclosure. And in this case, you want to think about, what would I put in this Faraday cage? And the question is, anything that you could use that wouldn't rely on other electronics. So, for example, if we have an EMP, you're not going to have a power grid. So how do you generate power to run your laptop? You know, the information in the laptop's great, but if you can't charge it, how do you do that? So it may even be that you need to, in order to make something like this work, also have a generator where you've taken the electronics off and put that in the EMP resistant box. And even then, you know, you think about the lifetime of the diesel fuel and the gasoline. How long will it actually last before it breaks down? So there's a whole variety of issues, more than just the EMP box, because of the fact you've got to generate power to charge it somehow. Another possibility would be human-generated power. So as I'm talking about the box, there is also this whole other support structure that you need for that electronics that you can't take for granted. So our enclosure is made of 188 thick aluminum. It's welded. There's a lid, and then there's a base. We designed it in such a way that we can create different size units. So you could come to me and say, Monty, I need one 6 foot long, 2 feet tall, and 3 feet deep. And we could do that. When you think about an EMP enclosure, it's always important to keep in mind how this enclosure attenuates the signal that you're dealing with. So when you talk about EMP or any kind of radio frequency interference, the correct way to look at it is to look in terms of attenuation. When the EMP blast occurs, it's going to put a certain amount, a fixed amount of energy into the atmosphere. That energy, the electromagnetic pulse, then goes out in all directions. And if it finds an antenna, which an antenna could be an antenna like you think about for your phone or your TV or your car, or an antenna could just be a piece of wire. So a good example would be our power grid would make a giant antenna to absorb that power and then radiate it out along the antenna. So I don't want to get too much into antenna design, but those antennas that you have could be short wires for higher frequencies. As the frequencies go up, the length of the antenna goes down. It could be long wires for lower frequencies. And so that antenna is able to get, it does exactly what an antenna is supposed to do. It takes that power and then conducts it out the end of the antenna and into your electronics. So the wiring that makes your electronics work in the event of an EMP becomes its worst enemy, because all those antennas are dumping power into those chips and burning them out. So an EMP blast is going to emit frequencies that range from the kilohertz up to the megahertz range. Now, when you think about a frequency, if you take the speed of light and divide by 2 and divide by the frequency in hertz, that gives you the length of the wave. This is very, very important when dealing with an EMP situation or any kind of electromagnetic interference, because the length of the wave, and let's divide it by 4 for the second harmonic, is what determines the length of your longest slot that you can have and still keep that power out. So with this box, the gasket, or however you seal it up, seeks to create a situation where you make the slot length, the longest slot, which is any slot that a wave could go through, is less than the 1/4 of the maximum wavelength you're looking at. So once we get up into the megahertz, high megahertz range, then all of a sudden these slot lengths get very small, and so the gaskets have to prevent the creation of a slot that would allow that through. So in order to carry across multiple frequencies, our box uses 3 different types of gaskets, and each gasket helps with a different frequency range. And one of those gaskets is a piece of finger stock, which also helps provide a good electrical path across the box, which would become important if you were very close to the device or the nuclear device when it went off and generated the EMP. So those 3 gaskets provide shielding at different frequencies, or are optimized at different frequencies. And what we try to do is cover as broad a frequency range as possible. And the other thing we try to do is have some redundancy. So in case maybe for some reason a gasket fails, the other 2 are still there to help attenuate that pulse. Now, the other thing we offer is that we also offer a mu metal lining. Mu metal is the same material that hard drives use to shield the electronics in the drive. So it's a material that really was it's heavily used in various small quantities at lots of pieces. So you can imagine the amount used in a hard drive is very small. It's on the back of the head. But our box, we need a big piece of it that needs to get welded together. So as a result, the mu metal lining is available, but it more than it triples the cost of the box. Just keep that in mind. The Faraday cage helps with the electrical pulse. The mu metal lining helps with the magnetic portion of that pulse. With the pulse, there's going to be electrical version, and then there's also going to be a magnetic version. And that Mu metal lining provides a shield for the magnetic. Magnetic shielding works very, very differently than electromagnetic. You can think of it kind of, with magnetic shielding, it's almost like a X-ray, where you create a shadow, and that shadow, if you're in that shadow, you're shielded. The other things that we use in order to clamp the lid down very easily, on the first box we've done, we've used 6 clamps, and that gives you very quick access to it, but helps us develop the clamping pressure we need. Once you have as many gaskets as this box has to give you redundancy and provide the degree of attenuation we want, then the clamping force gets fairly high, so you need several clamps. The box is, like I said, it's welded. We designed it so that customization is easily done. Excuse me. The box is well supported from the bottom. There's also casters to allow the box to be rolled around. And we have ground lugs. The grounding lugs allow you to connect it to a grounded connection, which a good way to create a grounded connection is rebar. Or a grid of rebar. The grounded connection gives that any charge that develops on the box a path to ground. Now, I will say at the same time, you don't want your ground cabling longer than it has to be, because it in and of itself becomes an antenna. So this box helps to protect your electronics. Now, the next question that should come up in everybody's mind is, does it work? There are different devices out there and different approaches. So, for example, a metal trash can with a copper band around the top may have a good bit of attenuation. Does it have enough? Well, that's definitely a difficult question to answer. And there's a lot of variables there depending on how it's built. So our next step, once we get the gaskets on the box, is to take the box and test the effectiveness of the gaskets. And while we're doing that at the lab, we're also going to test the effectiveness of several other configurations. So, for example, maybe a trash can, one of the Mylar bags, and see how that goes. I think that'll give us a good way to compare the effectiveness. Here's an expensive solution in our box. Here's a trash can. Here's a Mylar bag, an ESD-resistant Mylar bag. And compare those and actually be able to say, okay, here's what this gets you for much less cost, and then here's what this gets you for a lot more cost. I think that'll be a very valuable information for the community, because that really doesn't exist. Now, with our testing methodology, what we've done is to create a spark gap radio, and then we'll test using that spark gap radio inside of the enclosure to see what leaks out. That I feel like will give us a rough estimate of what to expect without going to the expense of doing a full-blown military EMP test, which is very, very expensive and just not in the budget, which would drive the cost of the enclosures up dramatically. So by building a spark gap radio and using different length antennas, we'll be able to test across a variety of frequencies and see what leaks out of the enclosure. And we plan to do that for some of these other methods that have come up, and see what actually works. That's the EMP resistant box / Faraday cage. I hope this gives you a little more insight into our thinking, why we did what we did, and how that relates to your prepping plans. There's a lot of unknowns when it comes to EMP, including how close you were to the device if it went off. Of course, if it was a coronal mass ejection, then everybody's close. There's a good bit of reading and education and some difficult decision making on everybody's part to decide to, how far do I take that? But I do know that a world without electronics would be a challenging world for everybody, because we are very reliant upon it, from our cars to our air conditioners to keeping medicines cold to making medicines to electrical equipment in hospitals. Most of that equipment has no protection against EMP. So now that I've depressed you, I do think that it's important that as a community we really evaluate which EMP solutions work and which work cost effectively, so that if something does happen, we're in a position to survive and thrive as quickly as possible and help our neighbors to thrive. So this is Monty Rowland. If you have any questions, don't hesitate to give me a call, 919-481-1845, or email me, Monty, M-O-N-T-I-E, at Monty, M-O-N-T-I-E, .com. Please visit the Monty Gear website, www.montygear.com, G-E-A-R.com. And when you get there, if you want more information about our EMP box, just click on EMP on the upper right-hand corner, and it'll be right there. Have a great day. Monty Rowland, signing off.